In the studio this morning, I have Penny Bright. Penny is a full-time activist here in Auckland, and she has been doing this for many years. She was also founding member of a water pressure group in July 1998, set up in opposition to Metro Water, a profit-making business outside the direct control of the elected Auckland City Council. Penny has been arrested 22 times in defence of the realm and our lawful right as citizens to open, transparent and democratically accountable local government. And to many listeners, of course, New Zealand, and especially Auckland, is at the crossroads. As so many people in this country perceive that Auckland is now in the grips of a corporate takeover, and if Auckland goes, all the other cities throughout New Zealand go too. For those of you who listen to this show on a regular basis, we have started a series regarding New Zealand's sovereignty, privacy, democracy, and accountability. So welcome, Penny, to the Freedom Party. And this time it's about personal freedom and sovereignty for us as Aucklanders, wanting to keep everything in the hands of a community. What took you into this realm of working so diligently to bring more public information to the community?
I don't know, it just sort of took over my life, and I think the main reason for that was, well, who else was doing it? It's just a role that I've ended up doing it, but make no mistake, I love it, because helping to make a difference for ordinary people, it's a very fulfilling life. A little bit more money might be helpful, but I'm not in it for the money, but it most certainly fills in your day.
Could you give the listeners an overview of Auckland, maybe take them back a few years to where we are now?
Once upon a time, before the first Rogernomics reforms, what we had a functioning Auckland region. Regional matters were dealt with by the Auckland Regional Authority, which built roads, dams and bridges and ran the public transport. Locally, we had local borough councils with a city secretary, a city engineer and a works department. That model was not broken. It was the Rogernomics reforms that broke it.
Rogernomics, clarify please.
Rogernomics is the name that was given to the reforms that took place in New Zealand under the 1984 to 1987 Labour governments, where they did things that National in their wildest blue dreams would never have got away with. And the reason why they were able to get away with it, in my considered opinion, is because of the influence that Labour had over the union hierarchy, who, when the workers wanted to rise up against the commercialised, corporatised, privatisation agenda, the Labour Party union members said, we can't embarrass a Labour government. Very similar has happened in South Africa under the ANC, actually. Very, very similar. And so a giant lid was put on the fight back. And the result of that has been, at central government level, that the public of New Zealand had over $19 billion of state-owned assets stolen off them. And what we're looking at now in Auckland is exactly the same Rogernomics, commercialise, corporatise, privatise agenda being set up for public property and infrastructure at local government level. But the big difference this time is, unlike the first Rogernomics Mark 1, where the assets were sold off lock, stock and barrel, this time the new form of privatisation is long-term lease of the assets. So beware the weasel words. The concern is not so much over sale or ownership of the asset, it is over the operation and management of the asset. And the two very simple questions to ask are, where is the income stream going and who is benefiting?
Well, who is benefiting and where is the income stream going?
Well, okay, back to the original story. When we had a model that wasn't broken, the old Auckland Regional Authority providing regional governance and the borough councils providing local democracy and on behalf of citizens, what happened was that a lot of private companies looked at all these services that were being provided in-house by workers directly employed by the council when the dollar signs started flashing in their eyes, and they thought, hey, we could make a few bucks here. So they started this myth and legend that public is bad, private is good. And what ended up happening was, first of all, we got amalgamations where we were told we were going to get these economies of scale. Not that anyone can point a stick at any facts or evidence that can back that up. But then they also ended up contracting out services that used to be provided from council. So now, from Rodney to Papakura, we have got thousands of little private snouts in the public trough. And the main aim of the super city is very simple. It is to set up a bigger public trough through this amalgamation that the public never voted for. And the idea is that it'll be fewer but bigger private snouts who benefit. In Monday's Herald, that's Monday, May the 31st, there is a big story in the metro section saying super city set up costs top 200 million and counting. This is $200 million that ratepayers are going to, well, they want ratepayers to pay for an organisation that we have had no say in it happening. We should have been entitled, under Section 24 of the Local Government Act, Reorganisational Proposal, Schedule 3, Subsection 49, polls must be held. We never had a final binding vote on whether or not we wanted our councils abolished and replaced by this one Auckland council. And of course the other problem is that up to 75% of council functions are being put under the corporate model, the council controlled organisations, where the public, we don't get any say in the selection of the board of directors. We had no say whether we wanted CCOs to run our key infrastructure in the first place. The public have no say in the statement of intent that governs the relationship between the council and the council-controlled organisation. And on top of it, the worst point is there's never been a cost-benefit analysis of any CCO model. And I've done research here that nobody else has done, and I have the letters from the bodies that I'm going to list for you who have never done their job. The Royal Commission never did a cost-benefit analysis of the CCO model, yet that was arguably their most significant recommendation, that Auckland Region's major assets and infrastructure should be placed under the CCO model. Number one, that the Royal Commission were tasked with maximising cost-effective solutions. They didn't do their job. Neither did the Office of the Auditor General. And I last year specifically asked the now ex-Auditor General, Kevin Brady, to do an urgent cost-benefit analysis of the Metro Water model, because the aim is to spread that model all over the Auckland region by having the Auckland Regional Water and Wastewater Wholesaler, Watercare, take over and get rid of the councils who do the retail supplying of water services. And the ex-Auditor General said that the policy debate at Parliament would cover the cost effectiveness of CCOs. And I said, well, that's news to me. Well, how can they have any informed debate anyway unless somebody does a cost-benefit analysis? Then what happened? The Department of Internal Affairs, they confirmed that the Royal Commission had never done a cost-benefit analysis, because I petitioned Parliament asking for there to be no legislative change until there was a cost-benefit analysis of CCO models, especially for water. I also asked the Auckland Transition Agency, the unelected body that's been set up to set the framework up for the super city, asked if they had any evidence of a cost-benefit analysis from either Treasury or the State Services Commission, or had any of the eight councils in the Auckland region done a cost-benefit analysis. And the reply back was they had no information, which means no, nobody had done one. And last but not least, and probably the most significant group that never did a cost-benefit analysis was Treasury. This was very significant. I asked Treasury if the New Zealand Cabinet had ever requested them to provide a cost-benefit analysis of the CCO model in order to substantiate on an evidential basis the cost-effectiveness of this model for the majority of citizens and ratepayers. And the reply was, Treasury has not prepared a cost-benefit analysis of the council-controlled organisational model as part of the Auckland governance reforms. Now, I put it to you, in the private sector, if I had this brilliant business plan, best thing since sliced bread, and I wanted billions of dollars of private sector money to support my brilliant idea, surely some investor, before they wanted to part with their hard-earned investment money, would say, well, yes, Penny, well, it sounds marvellous, but have you got any facts or evidence to support your business plan? No. Well, how on earth is that okay for billions of dollars worth of public money or public resources? It is a disgrace. And that, I believe, is one of the main reasons why people should consider disputing and refusing to pay rates from Rodney to Papakura, to dispute and withhold rate payments for water and wastewater rates, for their council rates, and for their regional council rates. Because it is the will of the people that is supposed to be the basis of the authority of government. And there is supposed to be no taxation without representation. We are citizens, not slaves. And who has been pushing for the running of the Auckland region to run like a business, by business, for business, unsurprisingly, has been business, very big business. And one of the main bodies that represents those who would financially benefit from this corporate takeover is a body called the New Zealand Council for Infrastructural Development, NZCID, New Zealand Council for Infrastructural Development. And to put it simply, they represent all the big snouts lining up to get into this bigger public trough. And again, from Monday, the 31st of May, Herald's article, Super City Setup Cost to Top $200 million and Counting, it is stated that the largest contract is $58.3 million to support day-to-day functions of the council, such as human resources, payroll, the financial system, and procurement. The contract has been awarded to a consortium, including SAP, Deloitte, Hewlett-Packard, and IBM, after 9 parties were invited to tender. My simple peasant question is, why on earth are you contracting out these services in the first place? Why are these services not being provided in-house? I mean, we don't want the One Big Auckland Council, but this concept that we have so many council services now contracted out when there's never been any cost-benefit analysis that contracting out model is more cost-effective for the citizen and rate-paying majority than when councils used to run the stuff in-house themselves. It is a disgrace. That is why I am currently disputing and refusing to pay Auckland City Council rates. I'm having my own one-person rates revolt. And the reason why I did this about 2 years ago now is because Auckland City Council CEO David Rankin refused to tell us, under the Official Information Act, where over $855 million was going in private sector contracts for goods, services, and people. So get a load of that. The budget back in 2008-2009 was $1 billion. Makes it very easy for the percentages. So, 855 million, over 85% of Auckland ratepayers' money was going on the contractocracy, and less than 15%, $145 million, on the bureaucracy. Now, what we have at Auckland City, which is the biggest, fattest, most bloated council in the country, is you have basically this ginormous, rotten iceberg. The tip of the iceberg are the consultant contractors, who last figure I saw for the consultant contractors was $63 million. Well, guess what? One of their major jobs is to project manage the works contractors, who do things like fix the footpaths, trim the trees, mow the berms, fix the pipes. Why are these jobs not done by council works departments and all these piggies in the middle got rid of? That's why I refused to pay, why I disputed and refused to pay my rates, because I believe the public have a right to know exactly where our monies are being spent. So I used myself as bait. I am freehold, so the council had to take me to court. And when I found out from a middle management person at Auckland City Council that they were going to take me to court, I was delighted. I couldn't get round to the Auckland District Court quick enough to get my own court papers, which is most unusual because most people run a mile from court papers. But as soon as I got the court papers, I had a CIV, which stands for civil, had a CIV court number, which I could then use to make a huge fuss about. I then sent an Official Information Act request to 85 councils all over New Zealand, regional councils, city councils and district councils. And what I asked them was, which one of them gave the devilish detail which provided for the public the information, the name of the contractor, the term, the scope and the value of the contract, and published those details in the council annual report so the public could see where their money was going. I got 65 replies out of 85 councils, which is a substantive piece of research. And guess what? Not one of those 65 councils gave that devilish detail about contracts. I then used that as evidence to support a petition to Parliament calling for an urgent amendment to the Local Government Act to make it a mandatory requirement that these details were included in council annual reports so they were available for public scrutiny. And what I took great heart from was that I discovered 2 years ago in about June the New South Wales, Australia Independent Commission Against Corruption. And they've got a marvellous website and they have done a lot of research and it's very easy to read and understand. And what I found out that in New South Wales, the majority of complaints that they got about corrupt practices were involved in the local government sector. And most of those complaints from the local government sector were to do with contracting out and procurement. And one of the key questions that officers from the Independent Commission Against Corruption would ask councils in New South Wales was, do you provide details of contracts issued in your annual report so they're available for public scrutiny? Well, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven because they were saying exactly what I was saying. So that is the reality. When you combine the fact that we don't know where hundreds of millions of our hard-earned rates monies are exactly being spent, and that's all over the country, and then you combine that with the fact that at the moment there is no register of interest for local government politicians and their spouses so that we know what financial interest they have, unlike central government MPs where there is a register of financial interest and it's available on the parliamentary website, the scope for corrupt practice is huge. Where is the transparency? What are the links between those who give the contracts and those who get the contracts? What sort of backroom deals are being done? Are there backhanders? How would you know? Who is checking? But if these two very simple changes happened, regarding publishing details of contracts issued and also having a register of interests publicly available, then that would open up the audit process, if you like, to thousands of members of the public who could see where our money's going. Because I have a very simple view that the public majority should benefit from our public money, whether that's at central government or local government, because at the moment we are not. And when I made a submission to the Royal Commission, because I have a quality assurance background, what I did to assist the Royal Commission, I made a list of the potential 112 services that can be provided by councils, and what I suggested that the Royal Commissioners do was stop the bus, take a picture right now of where public money is being spent in the Auckland region. Then, because right now we don't know which services from Rodney to Papakura are provided in-house, which services are provided by council-controlled organisations, and which services are contracted out. And then what I provided was a template for the Royal Commission where you could go through and compare on a council service by council service basis, like dog control and Rodney, who's got the contract, and going through the 8 councils on dog control so we could see a very clear picture of who's doing dog control and go through that list of potentially 112 council services to get the cold, hard facts so the public could see where our money's going. The Royal Commission, you know, they thank you for your presentation, but we're still none the wiser. And that, I believe, is absolutely pivotal at this stage because, like I say, it's my, you can see for yourself, and the example I've given you from Monday's Herald proves it's all about the big boys getting their snout in the trough, and how do we, the public, benefit from that.
I'm speaking with Penny Bright, talking about transparency, democracy, responsibility in what is the corporate takeover of Auckland City, New Zealand. Well, Penny, I do know that Environment Canterbury was abolished a couple of months ago. They brought commissioners in to run it, and those commissioners were getting $900 a day. So that's $4,500 a week. So that's happening down there in the South Island. So it really should get Aucklanders worked up to realise that we're paying all these hard-earned rates, because when it's all said and done, when Auckland started about 150 years ago, it's the ratepayers who put in the roads, it was the ratepayers' money that went into the water, pumping fresh water in and getting rid of all the sewerage, and these funds now have been built up. We've got $28 billion worth of public funds, some in the Auckland International Airport, some with the Port Authority. We as the ratepayers need to keep this, because this is our community chest. Where do you think it's all going, Penny?
Well, I believe that the public majority in the Auckland region, from Rodney to Papakura, are being treated as a giant cash cow, all pay, no say. It's all taxation with no representation. And the reality is that with this so-called new Auckland Council, even if you had Jesus Christ and the 12 disciples elected, they could not change the underpinning corporate framework which sets up the business model, the corporate model, council-controlled organisations to run 75% of our infrastructure and assets.
So this is a real subtle manipulation, and they've rewired how council should operate?
Well, I don't know how subtle it's been. I think it's been absolutely railroaded through. National lied to the public. Before the election, they had up on their website that National would consult with the public once the findings of the Royal Commission were known. They didn't. And for all those people who thought that the Royal Commission did a wonderful job and their report was a very scholarly document, please look at the basic facts. It was the Royal Commission that recommended the CCO, the corporate model, and in so doing, endorsed the corporate takeover. Now, what I like people to think of is, thank God that when the Nazis invaded France, that the French resistance didn't just wring their hands and go, oh my God, it's too late, we can't do anything. And think of those 12,500 young Kiwis who died as Anzacs in northern France and Belgium in the First World War. Do you really think they fought and died so that French multinational Veolia could come over here and run key parts of our infrastructure without we, the public, having any say in this? Every time you get on a train in Auckland, you look carefully at what is embroidered on the uniform that the staff are wearing. It is Veolia Transport. You may see some rubbish trucks driving around. Veolia Waste Management. And then who owns United Water that set up in Papakura in 1997? That was railroaded through as well. United Water are 100% owned by Veolia. It is the biggest French water multinational company in the world. And I tell you right now, they didn't come to the Auckland region for a few thousand households in Papakura. Their eye has always been on the jewel, and the jewel is Auckland Regional Water Services, because that's where the people are, that's where the money is. And I do know a bit about this issue because I've been doing this for 12 years, and please don't ask me to have a frontal lobotomy over the history. Here are the facts. Back in December 1996, the World Bank held a conference in Wellington. And what happened was that people were invited from around the world, and they were told what a marvellous job New Zealand had done with the commercialised, corporatised privatisation of state-owned assets and turning them into private businesses. The next area that they were looking at in December 1996 was local government assets, and they were looking at the establishment of local authority trading enterprises, which are the local government equivalent of state-owned enterprises. What happened in December 1996 was this Papakura United Water franchise was railroaded through over the Christmas period. People didn't know what was going on. I think there were about 8 submissions from the public. And what happened was in April 1997, this Papakura 30-year franchise with United Water was signed. I've got a copy of that contract. Who signed on the last page was the former mayor for Papakura District Council, David Hawkins. Now, this was a commercially inept contract, which has been subject to a report in 1998 by the Office of the Auditor General. There were some significant holes in this contract, a major one being that the idea was after 30 years, the asset would be handed back to the people in a better condition than when United Water got it. But they never quantified the state of the assets in the first place. So how can you give something back in a better condition when you didn't know what the condition was to begin with? In 1997 is when Metro Water was set up in Auckland City as a local authority trading enterprise. What happened was that the Waikato pipeline was an integral part of the secret corporate agenda to set up Auckland Regional Water Services for privatisation.
And the Waikato pipeline?
The Waikato pipeline, that was set up as a supplementary water source for the Auckland region, because in the mid-90s, when multinationals were sniffing around, apparently the word was that Auckland Regional Water Services needed to have a continual water supply in case of a big drought. Well, in 1995, goodness me, we got a big drought. How convenient. Legislation was railroaded through to set up the Waikato pipeline, which instead of being used just on an emergency basis, has ended up coming through our water supply on a daily basis.
And that is from the Waikato River, New Zealand's largest river.
That is correct. And I did a lot of research on this because a very good friend of mine, Annie King, Rarotongan grandmother, she took a $30 disputes tribunal claim in the Manukau District Court to try and close down a $165 million Waikato pipeline. And what Annie and I discovered in our research was Watercare had lied to the public. They had said that the water was AA grade when for 12 months the water couldn't be graded because they had to continually monitor it in order to establish a grading. And yet Watercare had sent out thousands of leaflets to the public saying the Waikato, treated Waikato water would be pure, which means not mixed with any other substance, pure and safe to drink, and it would be A-grade. And that was not true. The other thing is that the Waikato River at that time had over 2,300 point discharges where people were lawfully allowed to pollute the river. Why on earth we use our rivers as a liquid tip is totally beyond me. But I did the homework through the Official Information Act and found out that there had never been any short or long-term risk assessments of the potential dangers to the public for drinking treated Waikato water. What happened was, back where the water was taken from came under Environment Waikato, and they were concerned with the quality of the water if you were a fish, an aquatic plant, or a recreational water user. But once the water went in the pipe and came out the other end as drinking water, nobody had ever done any short or long-term health risk assessment. I mean, what about the accumulated effect of these different contaminants? Never been any research into that. But the key point here is, who did Watercare rely on in order to state that the Waikato River would be a suitable source of water? Thames Water. This report was in 1995. 2 years later, Thames Water were 45% shareholder of United Water when they got their contract in Papakura. What else happened with this corrupt corporate coup? What happened was, in the year 2000, this arguably commercial incompetent, the ex-privatising mayor of Papakura, David Hawkins, he was appointed by Mark Ford, the CEO of Watercare Services Limited, as the corporate liaison manager. And I know because there were two of us who protested outside Watercare on the day of David Hawkins' appointment. Why on earth is a public water company appointing a known privatiser? And we complained to Labor at the time, who were in power, and we got a bit of publicity, but from 2000, that's where David Hawkins worked for Watercare. Much worse, in 2007, this is the first time that you see the name and the photo of this person, there is a Graham Wood who appears in the Watercare annual reports. Graham Wood, again, was appointed by the former CEO of Watercare Services, Mr. Mark Ford, as the general manager for operations for Watercare Services. They were very coy in his resume about the work he'd previously done, extensive experience in the water industry over four continents. Well, guess what? Graham Wood had been a former managing director of United Water South Australia. This is the same United Water that had got a foothold in Papakura. And I have not talked to one councillor in the Auckland region that had any idea of this man's privatising background. Where is the transparency? Don't forget that Mark Ford is now the executive chair of the Auckland Transition Agency, who are setting up the framework for the One Auckland Council, the super city. And guess what? Graham Wood. His job is the program manager for the Auckland Transition Agency, and he is leading the integration of Auckland Regional Water Services into the one big Auckland company that the corporate plan is to eventually contract the operation and management to United Water. That is just filth. That is evidence of this corrupt corporate coup. It gets worse. What happened in South Australia, this is in an unprecedented court case. Last year, the South Australian government took South Australia United Water to court. This is the biggest water company in the world, remember, Veolia, who owns United Water. The allegation was that United Water South Australia had loaded South Australian water customers with corporate overhead costs from United Water contracts in New Zealand. And a key piece of evidence that was being relied upon in the statement of claim by the South Australia Water Corporation who were taking United Water South Australia to court was paragraph 43. On or about 5 April 2001, United Water provided to South Australia Water a copy of a letter from PricewaterhouseCoopers dated the 22nd of March 2001. The PricewaterhouseCoopers letter, prepared by PricewaterhouseCoopers on behalf of United Water for submission to South Australia Water. The allegation is that PricewaterhouseCoopers in this letter fraudulently misrepresented United Water's profits. Guess who was the managing director of United Water South Australia in 2001? This very same Graham Wood, who's now the program manager leading the integration of Auckland Water Services for this United Water corporate takeover. It is a disgrace.
I'm speaking with Penny Bright, talking about transparency, democracy, responsibility in what is the corporate takeover of Auckland City, New Zealand. So where do we go from here, Penny?
Where we go from here is that citizens and ratepayers of the Auckland region, you are citizens, not slaves. This is a corporate takeover. There are billions of dollars worth of our public assets that our rates have paid for over the generations, and rather than a swastika fluttering from the town hall, what we will be looking at effectively, or what may as well be happening, is the corporate logos of the Deloittes, of the big multinationals who have set up to take over, in fact have already started by getting contracts that we are expected to pay for when we never voted for this in the first place. SAP, Deloitte, Hewlett-Packard, IBM, there are a stack of contracting companies, big banks, big lawyers, and they are just dribbling, waiting to get their fat snouts in our public trough. Well, you can sit there, you can cry into your beer, you can wring your hands, whinge and whine, or you can get up and do something about it. Because if we are not going to learn the lessons from the first bout of Rogernomics, then we are going to make the same mistake the second time when it's Rogernomics applied to local government. For the sake of ourselves, our kids, our grandkids and future generations, we cannot just sit there. This time it is not people marching down the street in army fatigues, wearing swastikas on their uniforms and waving flags. It is people in business suits at 30,000 feet. And without a shot being fired, that is where this corporate takeover is happening. And we cannot allow it. The simple way is no say, no pay. And I call on citizens to give very careful consideration to disputing and withholding your rates. Because they're in it for the money, don't give them any. We were entitled to a binding poll, which we never got. So As far as action is concerned, the legislation for the super city and the legislation which is currently is open for submissions now with the Local Government Select Committee on the Local Government Act 2002 Amendment Bill, that is now open for submissions. And people, what you can do is on our new website, which is www.stopprivatisation.org.nz, be copies of submissions that you can run off and fill in. And the sting is in the tail of the submission, isn't that a horrible word, submission, is I hereby give notice that if my council considers contracting out water services to the private sector, I will consider disputing and refusing to pay those water wastewater rates. And this is not an empty threat that the government can ignore, because they know since July 1998 that the Water Pressure Group has been very active in a water bill boycott. On this proposed legislation, there are some absolute lies being told that basically water privatisation isn't privatisation. I've been to two international water conferences on exactly this point, contracting out and public-private partnerships where it's long-term lease of the asset, that is the most common form of water privatisation. Common sense tells you, you can't say that a contract of 35 years is privatisation, but a contract of 15 years is not. It's like saying a woman is pregnant at 9 months, but not at 3 months. It is not logical. And there are lies being told. Rodney Hyde on this point is absolutely misleading the public by saying that it's not privatisation. It most definitely is. What has happened is that we have called for a national day of action on Saturday the 12th of June, and we are calling for citizens and ratepayers all over the country to make a stand. We are suggesting from 12 noon to 2 p.m. outside your council offices or your town hall to show your public opposition to this proposed legislative change. And what we're calling for are mayors and councillors all over the country to show that you stand with the people and that the pressure for this legislative change is not coming from the public or the councils. And I've got the evidence to prove that. What I discovered as a process which I wasn't actually aware of, which I actually think is a form of corrupt practice, is that before legislation is changed, what happens is it is subject to a regulatory impact report, and that is prepared by policy analysts, which come from the area that the legislation is involved in. Like if it's involved in justice, it's policy analysts from the Justice Ministry of Justice. In the case of the proposed regulatory changes to the Local Government Act to make it easier to privatise water services, it is policy analysts from the Department of Internal Affairs. Well, I got sent a copy of this regulatory impact report, and I discovered to my horror that in the executive summary, it states the Local Government Act 2002 places significant restrictions on councils' provision of water services. These restrictions remove the power of councils and communities to structure their water services to best meet their needs and preferences, and are contrary to the Local Government Act, the core principle of general empowerment. So the suggestion in this executive summary is that it's the councils that are being hamstrung and held back by these restrictions. Well, guess what? I did an Official Information Act request to 85 councils, regional, city and district council, on this issue, asking if they or the public in their council area had requested this change to the legislation. 39 out of 39, which is nearly half of them, said, we have no information. So it hadn't come from almost half the councils. And then when I had a look at this regulatory impact report, I found out when it comes to consultation, who the pointy heads consulted with were the Treasury, Ministry of Health, Ministry for the Environment, Ministry of Economic Development, Local Government New Zealand, the Society of Local Government Managers, Engenium, which is the Association of Local Government Engineering New Zealand, and the New Zealand Council for Infrastructure Development. Well, I nearly had an apoplectic fit, because, as I've already said, the New Zealand Council for Infrastructure Development, they are not an independent third party. They represent the big snouts lining up who will benefit from this legislative change. There is nobody from the names that I read who's arguably, clearly, on the side of the public or the public interest. It gets worse. This regulatory impact report states the New Zealand Council for Infrastructural Development, NZCID, has identified several constraints that result from this restriction, which I already talked about, and what they is referred to is, according to research commissioned by New Zealand Council for Infrastructural Development into the state of the New Zealand water industry, the infrastructure is considered adequate, but major changes are required to one or more of the infrastructure condition, committed investment, regulatory regime and planning processes to enable infrastructure to be fit for anticipated purpose. Well, guess who did this research? Research was conducted by GHD and PricewaterhouseCoopers. You go to Google and you Google New Zealand Council for Infrastructural Development and you go to their website. You go to their list of members and ta-da! Guess what? Both PricewaterhouseCoopers and GHD are members of the New Zealand Council for Infrastructural Development. So how independent is that? So what happens is you get a really slanted regulatory impact report going to a cabinet who are already slanted on this issue, so they can hang their hats on their independent research from their policy analysts, when it is actually as biased as hell. And who is playing a major role are those who are set up to financially benefit. And in my book, I believe that is a form of corrupt practice, and I believe it is an outrage. And what happened was, I have raised this directly, face-to-face, with Stephen Selwood, who is the CEO of the New Zealand Council for Infrastructural Development. I bailed him up at the end of a seminar, and what other people may not know is that Stephen Selwood admitted in 2005 he put himself up for selection as the National Party candidate for Tamaki. And I asked him, was that right? And he agreed that, yes, it was a long time ago. Well, I don't think 5 years ago is that long ago. And, gee, he must be well connected with all those National Party connections, because he would have had to have been a member of the National Party to stand for National. How convenient is that? And then I asked him if he was still a National Party member, and he hesitated and said no. And then I said, well, Stephen, I've said this about you, so I'll say it to you. Don't you think it's a form of corrupt practice that the New Zealand Council for Infrastructural Development is treated as an independent third party when you represent, clearly represent, financial interests who have major, have a lot to gain from the change to this legislation? Rubbish, he said. And I said, well, how is it you commission your own members to do your research? PricewaterhouseCoopers and GHD? They're professionals, he said. I said, is that right? So how come it's a letter from PricewaterhouseCoopers back in 2001 that was a key piece of evidence in this South Australia Water Court case, where it's being alleged it fraudulently misrepresented United Water's profits? Well, by this stage, I think you felt like you'd been hit over the head by a softball bat, and that was the end of the conversation. But, folks, this is serious stuff, and I believe that the evidence that I've given you in this interview helps to support that this is a corrupt corporate coup happening in New Zealand, which is supposed to be the least corrupt country in the world.
Thank you very much, Penny, for bringing this information to us. To think that New Zealand is supposed to be an uncorrupt country, and to think that also that we have, as a nation, a fair players, believe in being honest and working for the benefit of the community, we have got some challenges. And the fact that you have been arrested 22 times and you're still here talking today means you don't go to jail when you stand up for truth.
Well, I think amongst the wife bashes, the traffic offences and the the drug offence is that in the district court, the judges do see you as slightly peculiar, but I've had four different district court judges now who have acknowledged the public watchdog role. So it's not an elected position, it's not an appointed position, but if district court judges want to acknowledge it, I will describe myself as a judicially recognised public watchdog for Metro Water, Water and Auckland Regional Governance. Yep. And also, and the Herald has referred to me as an anti-corruption campaigner, so, yep, I'm happy with that label as well.
Lovely. Thank you so much.
My blog site, if people want to find out some more in detail information, is http://waterpressure.wordpress.com. waterpressure.wordpress.com. It's information you won't get anywhere else. Website for background information on stopping the supercity is www.stopthesupercity.org.nz. www.stopthesupercity.org.nz. We were telling the public the truth about the corporate takeover for 6 months before anyone else was. So have a look.